Hi, everyone. This is Faye from Faye's World Media. I'm so excited to be here, not only with my co-producer, Adam Leffert, but also with our new friend, a magician, a mind reader, Alex McClear. Am I saying your last name correctly, Alex?
McAleer or McClear. Those are both fine, but McAleer.
I was practicing that. I'm so glad I asked. So I'm so glad you're here with us. And Alex, we're so excited to actually watch you live here in Worcester, Massachusetts at the Hanover Theater. And I personally have never really been there. I'm so glad that this is going to kick off, you know, my residency. I mean, this is where I live, but also as a content creator living so close to a theater and witness you and four other people in action as magicians. So to kick it off, I'm going to just briefly introduce you and so people know who you are. So Alex possesses the uncanny ability to apparently tap into his audience's minds and read their thoughts at will, drawing the mixture of expertise in psychology, unique mentalism techniques, and masterful analysis of audience members. Alex combines contemporary mind reading with sharp wit and a flair of showmanship. And I know also after watching several videos and interviews that you grew up as an only child, so did I. Adam is one of two kids, and I think that's just really interesting that there are a lot of stories, I think, that I remember growing up as an only child, playing with magic, trying to learn that is certainly part of it, trying to make friends and trying to seem really interesting, kick off conversations with other kids. But I also know that you have, you know, unique knowledge in terms of the fact that you create courses, you teach. I don't know a lot of magicians who do that. So we definitely want to get into it. So to kick it off, we want to talk about the show, which Alex introduced us to. We want to talk about careers. We want to ask questions that haven't really been asked before. So with that said, let's open up to Alex. Could you please tell us a bit about the show and your role in that show?
Absolutely. So the show is called Champions of Magic. It started over in the UK, where I'm from, in case you guys couldn't tell from the accent. It started in the UK in 2014. And it started as a small tour, like three or four venues. And then it grew and expanded. And we came over here in 2017 and started touring the USA and North America, so Canada as well. Mm-hmm. And we've been back and forth ever since. And it's like, so this year is 10 years I've been with the show since the show started, which is, I think, the longest career job I've ever had.
Wow.
But the show is, it's five magicians. So it's me. I do the mind reading, the mentalism. I delve into people's, you know, minds to tell them what they're thinking. There's also Young and Strange. They've been with the show since the start. They're also British. They're a double act. They're illusionists. They do the boxes. You know, the girl gets in, vanishes, spikes go in, she reappears. But they also do it with a very British sense of humor as well. They've got this brilliant bit in the show where they kind of pay homage and parody cheesy 1980s magic. So you get to watch the cool 80s magic, but also, you know, kind of poke fun at it. We also have Fernando Velasco. He's been with the show since 2014, I believe. And 2018, beg your pardon, 2018. He is originally from Mexico. He's our escape artist. He does the dangerous stuff, you know, the exciting stuff, upside down, a tank of water, ropes on fire, there's jaws of death. It's exciting. And also Holly England, although she's originally from England, she's lived in Vegas for like 10 years now. She started her life as a dancer over in the UK. And then as a lot of dancers do, they become magician's assistants because they can dance and also squeeze in those little boxes. But only over the past few years or so, she has become a magician in her own right. And in this show, she's all really found her own voice. She was quite nervous when she joined. She's not normally the one doing the talking. She's the one doing the striking the pose. So she's joined the show and brings her own style and unique voice to the show. So it's five magicians, and you kind of get to see every style of magic in the show. So if you've never seen magic live, if you've only ever watched it on TV or on YouTube, or even worse, just on your phone, then seeing magic live is a different experience because you know it can't be set up. There are no camera tricks. There's no editing tricks. Champions of Magic really offers a kind of a nice wide variety of magic and also styles of magic, all packaged in this sort of big spectacular evening of show of entertainment. Yeah.
Wow. I have so many questions, but I think Adam should go first.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of the genre. being a kid in the 70s, Kreskin or Geller, even.
Oh, wait, I'm going to show you this. I found this. If you remember Kreskin, I found this in a thrift store. I like old board games, so I have like the original Cluedo from the 70s. I bought this.
Oh my God. Yeah. Before the red button debacle.
Yeah.
The try at home.
Probably his original hair there as well before it was a wig.
Why do you think I brought these? These are my glasses.
Also, like, this is complete as well. It's got all this stuff, it's got the pendulum. Very exciting. Anyway,
it's open too, so you're playing it. You're not just putting it on a shelf for scaring nerddom.
But yeah, I had to show you that. So, because you mentioned Kreskin, and over in the UK, no one has any idea who Kreskin is. But
yeah, so tell us. And also, I mean, I won't bring the Ouija board up that Faye has told me I'm not allowed to play with. That's a whole other show. So yeah, with that beautiful hundreds, in a sense, even thousands of years tradition, when you go back to the Romans and the Memory Palace and things like that. Curious, even though we just met. What core parts of yourself do you feel makes your show unique or a unique experience for the people that come, you know, to interact with you?
Interesting. Well, it's all about like, because as Faye mentioned, like we've all sort of, when we were younger, would have learned some magic tricks and stuff.
Sure.
But everyone starts there. But I think if you become a performing magician, you realize it's not really the trick. The secret behind the trick is easy, usually, or sometimes it's really difficult. But if you practice, you can do it. That's how anything works, you know. Juggling's difficult, but people can juggle 9 clubs, you know. But you realize just putting in something of yourself, your personality, whatever sort of core values you have, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, some deep and meaningful message that you have inside yourself. It can just be something you find interesting and fun or fascinating. You just want to share it. And I think we all do that in this show, in Champions of Magic. We all have our own passions and loves. I mean, those in the performance, we don't just stand there and do the trick because that would be very dull. That wouldn't be entertaining. And I think all the best performers, especially in magic and any genre of entertainment or creativity, they do that. So in terms of what it is for me, I always think, like, I don't really have any deep and meaningful messages in my performances or magical mentalism. I don't even, like, you know, I don't present myself as psychic. I have supernatural powers like Kreskin does or did. I think he still does. And I also don't over push the sort of scientific element or anything like that. I just kind of do it. I just sort of give the audience enough knowledge to say, like, I'm not psychic. I can't talk to the dead, or I don't read palms or predict the future. I read people and I talk to you. That's all I do. And then I just get on with that. And the idea is that we just have a fun time. I don't take myself too seriously because I don't take anything too seriously. And the idea is it's just fun. And that moment, sharing that moment of people knowing something is true, like there's no way he could know what I'm thinking of right now, and then proving them wrong. It's a shocking experience, giving someone that shock of a moment where they're just like, oh, that's what I love about magic in general. So I try and share that with an audience. That's why I try to take things, yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful, love it.
And it's so interesting that I can't believe we kind of delve into this so quickly, so early in the show. But, you know, Alex, when we work with clients, when we talk individuals on the show, we love to connect with our audience. We reply to all the comments about how do I become a creator? Something has already been done. Everything has been done. And people are so hesitant to choose themselves to do the work that they love because they're worried to be the second best or never to be recognized. So I just found exactly the essence of what you said. It's really not about the trick. Like, you can find out some secrets on YouTube. That's not the interesting part. The fact that you bring yourself, you're creating that environment. And we are all in awe. You know, sometimes I love when street performers approach us, and I love the kind of the life scenarios, and you're caught unexpected, and you like to believe in the things that, you know, even though it's not necessarily real, but it brings you into that magical moment. Doesn't matter what your age is, you know, I'm almost 40 years old, and then just makes me think about, just it makes me come alive even in that moment. So I wonder, you know, like, you know, how long it took for you to realize that, and then, you know, what's that message for you to even communicate, maybe convey your audience? And people sitting there is like, I can never do this, but this is really fun.
To me, I think it took me quite a while to realize that it's not it's you. There's people who've written about magic, you know, since the 1800s and stuff. There's a guy called Gershwin who said the magic is you, which is a good mantra if you're a magician. The magic is you. I think it's a good mantra in life in general. It's almost like a Doctor's Use quote. You know, there's no one more than you, etc. But it takes you a while to realize that, which is why, but those realizing something like that, it helps you, it's hard to work out how to communicate that to an audience that you know, because obviously someone's going to watch a magic trick and they'll be like, this stuff isn't real. But you kind of want to engage that person as well. So if they just dismiss you, you can't dismiss them as, you know, you can't sort of patronize them into believing in magic, you know, the sort of Doug Henning magic. If you are also aware that, you know, of course I can't really know what you're thinking, but I'm going to make it look like I really could. Just make you doubt for just 1 second. Maybe you could just know exactly what's going on in my head. Then I've got you, and that's the game. Then it's just making sure that everyone feels involved. So just, and it's difficult to. It just takes time. I think it did take me a long time to realize how to convey to an audience what I sort of believe about what I create. And you're talking about creators. They could be the second best. My son's just recently got into magic. He's 13 years old. And for some reason, only now got into magic, which is fine. He's also an only child, so he's keeping himself busy, occupied. You know, anything he's interested in, we can help him buy the things for it or buy him some books on it. And he keeps coming up with new magic ideas. And I said, oh, yeah, that's a thing already. I'll look it up for you. And he kind of went, well, but it's already a trick. I'm like, no, that's good that you thought of a trick that already exists in this book from 50 years ago, because you're thinking like someone who's come up with an idea they published in a book 50 years ago. It's already, so you're already in thinking in this in the right way. You are creative enough. If someone else thought of the idea, it's a good idea because you also thought of it. And I think with being a creator, if you are so like your viewers or listeners or whatever, would be what I'd say to them is just create stuff. You don't be worried about like being second best or worrying about how to, I've got this message, but I don't know how to convey it. The more you create, it's the more you learn. And I'm lucky that I'm a performer, so I get an immediate feedback response. Like I studied art and design at college when I was younger. But one thing I didn't like about it is it's not an immediate reaction to what you've created. It's just slowly over time you might hear what people think about it or a tutor might give you their feedback. But with performance, it is immediate. And on the internet, it's immediate, often quite polarizing because of the internet. You know how the internet can be. But you do get an immediate response from something like a live performance. So I'm quite lucky there that, you know, the audiences that I perform for tell me what they like me doing and what they don't like me doing. So it's a feedback loop.
It's how vulnerable. I mean, it's very vulnerable. That's something like a lot of people are avoiding, but you're welcoming it. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, it's the number one fear, isn't it? Above being buried alive or anything like that is public speaking. But also, like I'm like most performers you'd meet, I'm a shy person. I don't really like putting myself out there. You know, with my friends, I'm very, you know, open and I like making them laugh. But naturally, I'm quite a shy person. And it does make you very vulnerable being on stage in front of people and especially putting something out there. It's a part of yourself and also a skill that you have. It could go wrong, you know, anything could go wrong at any moment. So there is also that extra worry. It's just, as we call it in stage performing, flight time. So like pilots, you know, you could have a 20-year-old pilot and a 30-year-old pilot, but the 20-year-old pilot might have more flight time. They've been in the air longer. So they're a better pilot, more senior. And it's just experience teaches you things. You know, it's the first step. Like if ever I'm doing new material on stage, a new trick or new dialogue or whatever, it's nerve-wracking. I've stood there in the wing just thinking, why on earth am I doing this? Why did I just become an accountant or something? it does make you very vulnerable. That's kind of the fun part, though. As a performer, I think a lot of performers like this, that it lives and dies in the moment. You do something and then it goes away again. You can't recreate that funny thing you said or that ad-lib that you had. And you kind of have to be at peace with that and just make it more exciting and fun, because it's very repetitive. You do the same show and the same material over and over and over again. Having those elements which make it different does make it more exciting for you. But a friend of mine, she does perform, she's also a musician, and she also has sort of a bit of stage fright anxiety about performing. But what she's done is she never says she's nervous. She always says she's excited. I'm excited to go out there. It's like she's relabeled it. She's reprogramming her own mind, basically. That it's not nerves, it's excitement. Because you are, it's the same. You're, if you feel excited about something and you feel nervous, you know, if you took all your blood pressure, you hooked yourself up a computer, it would look exactly the same. So you are excited. You're just excited about it. So just knowing that you're excited rather than nervous, it just changes the way you think and feel about something. Yeah, that's what I'd suggest. Is you're not nervous, you're excited. Just don't worry.
Love it. Adam, what's up?
Yeah, very cool. So many interesting directions to go in. One that I'm curious about is, you talk about how performing, real life comes into performing, and performing sort of bleeds into real life, and how you create this moment of shock of, I thought I knew how I think and what I am in the world, and then you show me that maybe I could be wrong, maybe I could be right. I'm wondering, in the 10 plus years that you've been working, as you then go into your regular person life, do you see experiences, relationships, like the sort of soft psychological side of your own life, has that changed given the power of what you've learned in creating your performing life?
I see. Interesting question. I think it's made me, because initially when I started performing, I did like close-up stuff. So you walk around an event or a party, and you have to essentially interrupt conversations with the promise of something worth interrupting a conversation with strangers for. And having to do that for a number of years, it made me more confident in talking to people, or knowing that you've got something to show them or share with them. So it's made me a bit more confident on that. And it made me one of those people that chats to cashiers or Uber drivers and stuff. I'm quite comfortable doing that. You just, you know, you've got the patterns and you know how to steer a conversation then. It has helped me in that sort of sense. And also, because of what I do, there's a fair amount of psychology involved in, well, any kind of magic, any kind of performing, but especially mentors and stuff, understanding how people think, not necessarily what they're thinking, but how people think about things and the sort of patterns they fall into. Hopefully it makes me a better understanding people, communicating with people. It's not really for me to say, but I think I am. But yeah, it does bleed into real life, but having a sort of, but also the me on stage persona and me are two different people almost, but extremely thin. So I can't really, my partner, she used to tell me off for putting on my stage voice in life, because I'd suddenly become a bit more, like I talk a bit more, not sternly, but you know, with more confidence. And could you hold that there? And she's like, don't talk to me. Sorry. Yeah, it does. It does change you, sort of changes the wiring in your brain a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Really interesting. You know, Adam and I have had the pleasure of really traveling domestically, but also internationally, with the purpose of interviewing performers. And then I love how you use the word performers, because we're talking about, like, we think of them as creators, as artists. We've had numerous conversations with people in Cirque du Soleil. You're the second magician. We have interviewed, the first was David Williamson from Circus 1903, also a ringmaster. And I feel like the theme, and thank you for giving us a title, that perfect title to this episode, The Magic Is You, right? And I just love it for so many reasons. But I think what I have learned, and there's part of me that makes feel like my relationship with these people have become really personal, not just professional, because I care about them. I see them take off in the air. I worry something's going to happen to them. As you're, you know, sometimes as you're performing on stage, I know you've been doing this for 10 years, but I'll be rooting for you to say, I hope, you know, like, hope this works out. And sometimes I realize what's missing, or what I hear in conversation with, like seeing like negative reviews for a second here. Like, it really hurts me. Like, I can feel in my gut when people commenting on things like, I know this trick, I know how it's done, or this trick isn't dangerous enough. Part of me is thinking like, I worry the art in itself has become for complexity's sake. Like, what is the most difficult thing to do as opposed to what's interesting? And the other is, like you said, people take away, just people focus on the technical things. Like, I'm not a contortionist. Oh, this is interesting because I can do it. So I wonder if that question makes sense of like how we as human beings tend to in some ways, like complicate things or taking the humanity outside of the art itself, and therefore making our lives less interesting and in some ways more miserable. Like I kind of want to like, how do we shift the mindset so they understand what art really is?
I really agree with that. I think a lot of that is to do with the things like Got Talent show, Britain's Got Talent America, it's more every year because the hunger of television, how the people that make TV think what the public want, they're wrong. But it's that thing of, yeah, it has to be faster, more intense, more dangerous, you know. I thought there's several examples that came to my head, but you're right. It really annoys me, like, because you were just talking about if you're sat there and you're, as an audience member, you like the person, you get to know them and you want them to succeed. Like, I like playing with it. I have a couple of routines in my own show. I don't do them in Champions, but in my own show, I finish with a routine where it looks like it's gone wrong, which is a classic plot in magic. Magician in trouble, But the way I do it, I'm toying with that bit that over the past hour of these people being with me, they've got to like me in some aspect or another, and it goes wrong for me. And I like slightly playing with their emotions that they feel bad for me in that moment, but oh wait, he can save it at the end, which is a very cruel trick, but it's part of the emotional roller coaster that I want to put people on. But excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, take your time, please.
I do think it's the people, they want it to be, there's a thing about, I think it's Penn Jillette says this, from Penn and Teller, the tall guy that talks, not the short guy that doesn't. He said about that, if you watch a tightrope walker 100 feet in the air, it's exactly the same as watching him 2 feet in the air, but you're more invested. But the reason you're invested is actually kind of a cruel reason, because you want to see them fall. There's a potential they might fall and hurt themselves. So he always wanted to do this idea, apparently his producer said no because it cost too much, that there'd be a tightrope 2 feet off the ground. And he said, if I fall off and touch the ground, everyone in this room gets $10,000. Now they're emotionally invested, but it's not danger, it's the chance of winning money. So it's the same thing. Mm. But yeah, it's people, I think they try to make it more complex. A lot of magic, I feel, can suffer from this, and especially if it's for something like a 3-minute spot on a TV talent show where you're going to be judged by people who have no idea what they're talking about. You put in too many tricks into one thing and the simplicity or the elegance disappears. There's like a thing in magic where it should be, you should be able to describe what happened in a sentence. They cut the girl in half and put her back together again. He made the Statue of Liberty disappear. A sentence. Not, he made the Statue of Liberty disappear, then he solved a Rubik's Cube, but the Rubik's Cubes together spelt out my nan's anniversary when she was, that's too much information then. But because you think to be creative or to be artistic, it has to be like brutally original, you're just trying to stack on more and more ideas rather than just realizing that if you just do it yourself and bring something of yourself to it, it's now original and people will like it. Mm-hmm. It's a hard mindset to get into. So when I'm creating new routines or things to do on stage, I have to try and strip them back. There's something in the show we've been working on for a while, and it went through many different guises. But eventually what we did is strip it back. Just take out bits, edit it away. You know, you're an editor, not a writer. Edit, take things out, rearrange them. And then it's a nice, simple plot to follow, something easy to follow. It's quite a complex idea I'm trying to get the audience to understand. So you just make it really simple and it can crescendo at the end rather than going all over the place. But just making things too complex. I think it's just a worry within yourself that it's not original or you want more people to like it. But normally simplicity is the key with anything, any creative project, you know?
That's so fascinating.
Yeah, beautiful. Kind of on that same tip, you talk about minimalism and the ability to kind of shock somebody from inside. And to the spirit of somebody who might look at magic, as you said, kind of like a Doug Henning jazz handsy kind of thing, or like a little bit cheeseball, to reach out to those people. I've heard you mention magic as almost related to stand-up comedy.
Yes.
Before, and as that's something that people do themselves or find approachable, I wonder like thoughts or feelings on that.
Yeah, I said, because as Faye would have mentioned, I do sort of teach and lecture to other performers, magicians, either in person or online. You know, there's a big industry sort of quietly behind the scenes of videos you can buy or lectures you can buy. But yeah, I say with especially with mentalism, what I do, there's not a lot of props or visual interest or boxes that do interesting things. So I've always said that we have more in common with stand-up comedians, mentalists do, mind readers, than we do with a Dove production act. Even though we're both in the genre of magic and we do deception or we do magic, we have more in common with the stand-up comedian because stand-up comedians are kind of, they're engineers. They are engineering sentences, either intuitively or with the knowledge of how the structure of a joke should work. They're engineering it. So we should engineer our the structure of a routine or a trick or a presentation in a similar way. And the understanding of the psychology of how the rhythm should work or how people think. And, you know, you don't say you say the punchline, the funny bit is the very last thing you say. You don't then add on something at the end. Otherwise, it's not a punchline. It's sort of a, it's sort of understanding that. And also just, I used to watch a lot of stand-up comedians. Back when you bought DVDs or VHSs, I just watched them and fall asleep to them. So Eddie Izzard or Billy Connolly, or there's a guy called Lee Evans in the UK. And I guess these days it would be other names that would be more popular. Chris Rock as well, who was fantastic. Seinfeld. And just watching them sort of observe and understand what they're doing. You sort of can mimic what they're doing. Not literally, you don't just copy exactly what they're doing, but you can sort of understand, oh, it's funny they do this thing. You know, Dave Chappelle has that famous thing, he always hits the mic on his leg to make a noise, because then the audience have permission to make a noise. Like any of the people watching this who are performers, you'll know that if you sit in an audience somewhere and their audience can feel there's an applause cue happening, if you just go, the whole room bursts into applause. And if you ever watch me perform, if I can feel the audience I'm going to applaud, I clap myself, as in I kind of go, oh, fantastic. And that just sets them off. It's just knowing those tricks of the trade helps you go. Helps you create the feelings that you want and the moments that you want, the emotions. Yeah. Yeah. Stand-up comedians have, also I'm slightly jealous of stand-up comedians because they can just turn up and pick up a microphone and talk, and they are creating little magical moments and making people laugh, whereas I do need a bit of production behind me and a big silly chalkboard for me to write on and stuff. But I mean, less so than the Illusion guys in the show. They need trucks, big boxes and stuff.
Beautiful.
The noticing as an act, like you mentioned, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Dave Chappelle. I know it can be controversial, but even with that, I think he's so brilliant. And what I think you have created, I mean, right now we're in this moment where it's the three of us, we're talking to each other. I'm constantly thinking about you two, what you're saying. I'm not thinking about anything else, literally, like this. It's like when I'm swimming, even I'm a pretty good swimmer, but when I'm swimming, I'm pretty much just thinking about swimming. So these moments are really precious in a way. And I think in your act in particular, the person that you're working or doing the magic with, you really have to be very focused on that person and no one else. I feel like this is the sort of thing that I feel like with so many distractions, and we interview people about how to manage distractions, near yell and the, you know, between this book Hooked and, you know, creating these products, like everything we do is about attracting people's attention. And yet all of us are very distracted. I think in particular, how I feel about going to these shows is like, I'm very devoted and dedicated to pretty much every single moment. And I find it incredibly enjoyable as opposed to me sitting in a social conversation, driving somewhere, meeting up with friends at a table with 5-6 people, and everybody's on their cell phone for some reason. And I just wonder, I feel like in a way that it has given you the superpower, number one. And I wonder how you, I think Adam asked a similar question, like how you live through your life. What are some of the advice and tips that you can give other people, focus, distraction, and all that? And I also think, secondly, you have a level of maturity as a performer as well. So maybe we'll get into the maturity in a second, because that's really interesting too.
So focus, but it is difficult. Also, yeah, you're right. On stage, it's my favorite part of the day, because it's very, as they would say in mindfulness these days, you have to be very present. And it's fun. It's funny sometimes, like after a long run of shows, like we've just had a little bit of a break, but like I'm just getting over a cold. And so I know I'm going to have to work extra hard tonight because I'm going to be distracted by how I'm feeling into it. Like my ears are a bit blocked and my nose isn't running. So I am going to have, and if we've been doing a long run of shows and all five of us are on stage and someone else is talking about their bit, it's going to be my turn in a minute, then it's going to be strange. If you find yourself just slightly wandering off in your mind, thinking about, I wonder what there is for dinner after the show, you have to like, no, stop yourself. Be present, be reacting, or just be neutral. As soon as you find your mind wandering, like, no, come on, focus, you're at work right now. But yeah, I suspect you have to be present, because I personally love the pressure and responsibility of, like, as soon as I walk out on stage for my first like 20 minute set, it's my job right now for these 1,000 people here. It's my job now to entertain them, and it's all down to me. I have to keep them there, and then I have to keep them in a nice, happy place, so when I go off and Young and Strange come on, they've got them and they can play with them now. But yeah, focusing is really, if you're just, sometimes it's difficult to, in creativity, you have to have moments of focus, but also focusing off the subject. We're always trying to problem solve. And my problem solving is like, I've got this idea for a trick, but it's not working. Got a problem solved. So you'd have a moment, you have moments of taking in information, reading stuff, even if it's nothing to do with what you're doing, or just looking at something artistic or whatever it is you're working on, something akin to it. Just take it all in and then don't think about that thing anymore. Go do something else. Like if you swim, that's probably your moment to, you can only focus on swimming because it's hard work. I like going to the gym. So you have to focus on what you're doing to make sure you're doing it properly, not going to hurt yourself. But it allows your mind to put all the pieces together so it presents you with a solution. I like focusing like that. Focusing on what I'm doing by not doing it is a really interesting way of doing it. There's also a great speech. It's by John Cleese from, you know, Monty Python, as you guys say. And also Fawlty Towers. Yeah, John Cleese. It's on YouTube. I think if you just type in like John Cleese creativity talk, I think it's filmed in the 90s. He's got a brilliant talk about what it's like to be a creative. And it's funny as well, so it keeps it more engaging to watch. And it's something, I can't remember, there's like five things. And one is, you know, it's like basically bringing in information, not thinking about the thing, and then suddenly the solution will present itself. But the time bit is the time to, okay, I'm going to spend an hour on this thing. So you sit down and having a buffer of time to know that in that first 20 minutes, you're going to be distracted. You're going to sit down at your laptop. Right, I need to work on this project. I have to remember to put the bin out later, or the trash out later. Or I also need to phone Bob and tell him about it. Okay, I need to focus on this. You need that buffer that your brain is going to, once it's quiet for a moment, it's going to throw this other information that's in the to-do pile. Just allow that to happen. It's going to happen, so don't get frustrated. Just allow it to happen. And then you'll find, oh, I've thought about that now. Now I can focus on this task. But also, if you are just banging your head against a brick wall, just stop. It's not gonna help you if you just get frustrated in the moment that you're not focusing. Just allow yourself to, your mind to wander. You know, staring at the blank page, is nothing creative is going to come from that. So do something else. Like I mentioned, I did art and design when I was young, so just drawing something. I like doing a sketching thing. I just draw a big squiggle and then try and interpret what it looks like and then add in the details and some color and stuff on my iPad. And that just allows me to focus on something else, but it just draws your attention in. So now you're thinking in that way. So then when you go work on a project, you're now already in a focused state of mind. But yeah, the distractions, I talk like I'm an expert. I was home for like 2 or 3 weeks. I was distracted all the time. Like I literally went around and tightened all the door handles and all that because I was just like, I've just got to do something. Oh, I've got to make my son some dinner. Yeah. It can be difficult to focus, but having time and space is really important. Having a space you can go to, like it looks like, is this your office that you're in right now, Faye? Or it looks like a nice space that's just kind of basically dedicated to creative time. Mm-hmm. Having something like that is really good. Even if it's like a local coffee shop you can go to and sit there, put on some noise cancelling headphones. Just allow yourself time and space to focus. Yeah.
No, I love it. I'm going to borrow some serious tricks. And then even just like, I feel like in some ways these are affirmations, because I notice when I get stuck on a problem, Adam is the same way. Adam is also a developer, computer scientist. We sit there and we're just like, we got to figure it out. We're so close, and you're burned out. And sometimes I go for a walk, and during my walk and I come back, literally within 30 seconds, like the aha moment is right there. It's like, Why didn't I stop away hours ago?
I did the same thing recently. I was trying to think about something, and I go for a walk because I was staying at a friend's house in the countryside, beautiful English countryside. And I got about 10 minutes down, and then I just caught myself. I was on my phone typing, going, I have to write this down, otherwise I will forget by the time I'm back at the house. And I was like, oh, it worked almost immediately. I hadn't even gone to where I was going to go and then come back. And I was like, oh, it just is instantaneous. There's also a thing in script learning, and I've done a bit of acting in my time, and I kept getting a line wrong or stumbling over something. And the director I was working with went, stop, let's just move to another thing, because otherwise you're going to learn the mistake. I was like, yes. And also it happens creativity as well, is that if you just keep bumping up against the thing, just do something else, because otherwise you're just reinforcing in your brain that neural pathway of just getting stuck there. So just go do something else. Otherwise it's going to put up a barrier rather than, it's going to put up a dam, but you want a really bad dam. So stop early on, so break apart and come back to it later.
Love it. Adam, any reflections from you?
Yeah,
or
so many.
Any new questions?
Yeah, so I mean, John Cleese, just for a lifelong hero, for fans of his, something you may not have run into, his audiobook of his autobiography is extraordinary. Just to lean back and have this man narrate his life for 12 hours, all the richness. And then when they were doing that in his real life, this is what was happening there. Is amazing. But as you talk about it, it's also just like, you know, Faye and I've been through a lot of, like, dozens to hundreds of yoga classes together. What you say is exactly the beginning of the yoga class. I've got the voice, and like, now I know you're thinking about the oil change, or about, you know, you ran out of eggs. There's this sort of dropping in moment. So you have that, as Brian, a Family Guy would say, presence, you know, when you're working. You also mentioned people who maybe have just only experienced magic through their phone or through YouTube. Maybe say more about, of different kinds of people, what their experience has been of a live show, you know, smell of the crowd. How is that different? How is that moment, I shouldn't say special, but, you know, maybe more engaging on a gut level than watching your phone?
Oh, for an audience member, how's it different to be in the room? Well, I think it's funny in this show, because it's a family-friendly show, you know, I think what we say is that no one under five, just purely because of the pyrotechnics, would scare them the bejesus. There's bits, there's really silent moments. There's like a couple of really visual things. We borrow a bill from someone in the audience, we all do something with it. And there's a really visual moment where something on the bill moves. So no spoilers, but a printed thing magically, like, you see it move. And it's funny, you just hear the stunned silence from people over 14. But anyone under that age, you just hear this, what? Because they just can't help themselves. This, what? That's not how the earth works. You've just completely ripped away their understanding of everything around them. also, this new, I mentioned there's a new routine I've been working on. It's not new, it's been in the show for like a year and a half now. But there's a couple of applause cues, we call it the trade, where it's like, and here's the thing. In this particular routine, there aren't many. There are lots of moments of magic, but the audience don't make a verbal sound. They are silent. And when you're trying something new, that's bad. You don't know, because you don't know what they're thinking, because you can't see the audience on stage. Ironically, if you don't know what they're thinking, you know, if you get an audience to laugh or they clap or something, you know they're all on board. They all understand the idea, at least. But when they're silent, you don't know what they're thinking. But it took me a little while to realize that when this thing's something's happening on stage, they're silent because they're just going, what is happening right now? Is this real? So it was a good thing. There's certain types of silence which are good. That is worrying as a performer. But I think one great thing about magic is if you go see a comedian, you're just going to laugh, which is good. It's wonderful to see a comedian. And there's different types of laugh. There's that kind of laugh where you know you shouldn't laugh. There's the type of laugh where a laugh of familiarity, a laugh of how clever a joke was. But there's even more sort of, you know, colours in the rainbow of seeing a magic show, because there's shock from something visually happening, or shock from a revelation, or seeing something that's like, you see something you can't quite understand. It's almost like a puzzle and you're just perplexed. There's a real gamut of different emotions that you can go through watching a show like Champions, where you get to see every type of magic. You'll see small stuff, you know, projected on a big screen. You'll see dangerous stuff like Fernando when he's upside down in a tank of water, even if you think those handcuffs that were checked, maybe they're special somehow. Maybe they just dissolve in the water. Or maybe maybe he can actually just get out quite easily. But you could tell he's underwater because you can see there's water and he's upside down. And you heard him beforehand doing some weird breathing stuff, which in silence is just quite tense. Even if you think it's all just a trick, you're like, he's definitely underwater and upside down. This is genuinely dangerous. So you still get that genuine emotion, that didn't rush. There's also another bit he does when he's straitjacket escape, and I'm in the wing because I come on immediately afterwards. And there are some people that just sat in the front rows where you can see that are just like this. Because they just don't want to see it because they're just too frightened to be confronted by something. Or when there's an illusion taking place and the way you see people, like the girl saw in half pulled apart, you see her whisper over to their partner. What they're saying. They could be going like, oh, I saw this on The Masked Magician, blah, 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 blah. Or they'd be going like, oh, I thought it worked like this, but it can't be because I can see her legs, you know, things like that. You get a real, I think everyone gets a different experience. Mm. What's nice, all experiencing the same thing at the same time. That's the wonderful thing about live theatre. It's so difficult about the lockdowns and things that happened is you couldn't share an experience. It's a really nice experience to share something with a whole audience. People, I love being an audience for a show because you're all experiencing at the same time, the same emotions, the same thing.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful, nothing beats live theatre, I think.
Yeah, for real.
It's so fun because we're such good friends with Atherton twins from Cirque du Soleil. And when they're also from the UK, and when their little kids are watching them from the audience, which happens all the time, the dads are aerialists and, you know, they're flying across the stage and the kids would be like, daddy, daddy. And, you know, and the whole stage can hear them. It's so adorable. I love where, you know, I love Adam's question, how you answered it, and make me think about the fact that, you know, part of actually a lot of our listeners and viewers on YouTube are very, very international. I look at the analytics, it's like 30-40% from the US, and then the rest is like 1% there. And it's amazing. I think about in particular these you know, as a magician, as a performer. I mean, I just feel like it's boundless in terms of who you can influence with or without language, frankly. So I wonder. And I know you traveled quite a bit for your work. And I wonder whether people's primary language is English or otherwise, like, have they reacted to your show to you differently from different places? And, you know, I'm curious.
Well, because also I as you mentioned, like lecture and write things for other magicians. So that also has opened me up to people around the world as well. So I have followers and people that message me saying, I really like your stuff around the world. And it's, you kind of go, oh, wow. But yeah, different countries and different places, and even the US, because the US is like 50 states, but it's basically 50 different countries.
Yeah.
You know, someone living in North Dakota is not living the same life as someone in California. Different people, different lives, but they just happen to both be American.
True.
But yeah, there are different vibes, I guess, from different countries, which I think more sort of social and how people grow up in certain countries or social economics and all sorts of things. And one great thing, so when we first came over to the US, we all have this story, all us Brits that are in the show, is first US show we did. So we've been touring the UK since 13, 14, 15, 16. So 4 or 5 years. And before that, we'd all been doing our own thing in various ways. We first came over to the US and all quite excited, all quite nervous. Lights went down in the auditorium and the audience started cheering and clapping. And we were like, what's going on? What's the noise? And it's because the audience were excited. Because like in North America, you appreciate entertainment. You spent $100 on a ticket and like, I'm ready. Happy to be entertained. Oh, here he is. Great. Fantastic. Yes, I'm having a great time. UK is a little bit more, not quite the case, but if you want to be quite generalistic, they're kind of a bit more like, come on. And also like this second or third time I walk out on stage, some of them might have warmed to me in the UK, but the others are like, oh, here he is again, impress me now. It's like, oh, come on. Whereas the US, it's a bit more, you're ready to be entertained. And the same, it's the same most of the world, like Canada as well. Australia always have great audiences when I performed there. Europe as well. It's very the rest of mainland of Europe, the main part of Europe, not the UK. Love magic in general. There's a lot of well-known magicians that, because they only work in their own language, English-speaking places we've never heard of. But one thing that is nice though about magic, it is universal. I mean, I do a lot of speaking in English, but you know, we've worked in Mexico and I sort of learned bits in Spanish, and it still works because people like, because magic is dealing with changing your understanding of the world and how it works, break the rules of reality. That's a universal, it doesn't matter where you're from. You could be living in a tribe that's only ever seen the Western world a dozen times. Someone picks up something and it makes it float. That's impossible no matter where you're from. So magic does have that kind of universal thing. A bit like, you know, how silent comedy does. Everyone knows Mr. Bean, you know, Rowan Atkinson. In fact, it's sold worldwide. And it's just this guy that in the UK would be like, oh yeah, Mr. Bean, that thing that used to be on in the 90s. But it's still a worldwide phenomenon. But so, yeah.
It's, can I just comment on that? Because Mr. Bean became, it was just the number one show, the most popular show in China. First of all, he barely spoke anything, I know.
Yeah.
But it was just, the comedy just resonated with the Chinese audience so much, like being in school, trying to cheat during exams. And, you know, I came to the U.S. I came to the U.S. 22 years ago. I grew up in Beijing, which I forgot to mention. But I came over here. Very few people here in the U.S. have heard of Mr. Bean. I have, of course, had my DVDs and everything. I played it. American people are like, what's so funny about this?
Yeah.
It, to me, it was just like, wait a minute, if Chinese people got this, how can American people?
He's playing with the sort of social norms of things. Mm-hmm. I guess Mr. Bean, maybe like, it's a very small world because it's Little England. So him going to church and having a cough sweet and then all that sort of stuff, you know, we get that, but maybe it's different in America. The American humor, like the American Office versus the British Office, are two very different shows. They just happen to be quite similar. The names of the characters are the same, basically. But the comedy is entirely different. So,
yeah, but I think it's interesting. Of course, my mom's comment was, my mom, you know, have to like read subtitles. It's exhausting. Yeah. If you don't understand English, my mom's like, I understand why American people don't understand Mr. Bean, because the translation, the subtitle was so bad. I was like, mom. And then she is like, don't ever mention this on your live stream.
I got to say, as gray haired dude, I think it's generational because, you know, Faye, you know, before we got to Dave Chappelle, before we got to these people, Faye told me, oh, Mr. Bean is like her number one hero. But the second I saw him, I see Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, I love Buster Keaton. Also, this is a very niche thing to argue about, but sometimes people are like, I love some things. I think Buster Keaton is much funnier than Charlie Chaplin. Buster Keaton has funny bones. Charlie Chaplin is a bit more Americanist, it's a bit louder and a bit more obvious, whereas the Buster Keaton thing is quite subtle and
cool.
And like the Harold Lloyd thing is obviously the most famous one, but of the Clock Tower. But yeah, it is that. It's that same tradition of things. But it's like how Teller's the silent one in Penn and Teller, but he's never studied any, I believe, you know, properly studied any clowning or physical movements, which is why his physical movements could be better, really. He could be a better silent performer, but it's not really, because he's just silent. That's it. He's an exceptional magician. He's the greatest living magician, I think.
Yeah.
He's not like a Buster Keaton-esque silent performer. Mm. He's just chosen not to speak.
It's so funny. I were like remembering, I'm laughing at all the things you guys are talking about. I have to comment that since I left Beijing, I pretty much have been in New England, namely like Boston, Massachusetts, Maine, New York, like most of the time. And then I traveled for work, you know, quite a bit to California, Arizona. And I just, like you said, it's like, how are people so different while they're from the same country? And I remember, so when I'm so curious, after you visited Worcester and performed here, Worcester is only like one city inside the state of Massachusetts, but I'm not going to prepare you. I think they're going to be super excited. I can feel the energy already, but at the same time, it's like people traveling from California, from Oregon, these speakers showed up in Boston, a Future M or like HubSpot's event. And they're like, oh, this is how we save the world. And Boston people would be like, oh, sitting there in silence. And then I later interview those speakers, like Mick Evling. He's like, what is wrong with people in Boston? Why aren't they touched by? I was like, trust me, I really, really want to stand up, but I looked around. So there is something about, I mean, it's called New England. So there are a lot of
it is a bit more of an England vibe, especially like even if you go to Boston, it looks like England. Like it looks like a bit of London. I remember we're there just beforehand. We've been there before. And there's even stores and shops, which I've only ever seen in England. I'm like, where am I right now? But it is just different types of people. Yeah, it is. But you can imagine, though, especially like the Californian thing. Like if someone came on and said, so Fernando is originally from Mexico. He lives in California. Lives in LA. Has done for many years. He's young and full of energy. And he sometimes he comes out on stage and says, like, you know, Worcester, are you with me? And they'll get a cheer. But us Brits backstage are like, you could never say that in England. You could never be like, London, are you with me? And they'll be like, yes.
Oh, this is so fascinating. We also traveled to the UK, actually end up interviewing someone there, and it was super fun. But it's just so familiar to us. And the crazy thing, I'm not sure if you knew, Alex, but if you ever look at the map of Massachusetts, you look for every single city, street names, everything replicates the things that we've seen in London, like in the UK.
Oh, yeah. It's slightly confusing as a Brit. It's
so confusing.
They're not right places either.
Well, yeah, we were just in the wrong places, right?
Like a month or so ago, we were in a place called Norfolk in Virginia, and I live in the county of Norfolk in the UK. And then we went to Norwich, the same city I live in the UK. But it's like these are not similar at all. Why did they name them after each other? But yeah, New England, it's all the street names are named after towns. Yeah, it's bizarre. But also being a performer as well, you have to kind of there's that thing of read the room. You kind of have to read the room of the town or the city you're in. It can be harder on a one night show. Unless you've been to that sort of area or state or whatever before. But sometimes it does take a moment to sort of understand the level to pitch up for the audience, where you sort of, where they are and where you need to be. I kind of like that. It's a fun sort of quiet bit. I'm doing my job because I know the material, I know what I'm saying, I know what I'm doing. And I'm sort of tinkering with the energy levels to try and make sure that it's where the audience needed to be. Yeah, because you can't just try and force your California enthusiasm on a quiet New England town.
So true. I know that I want to respect your time and have to let you off the hook at one point, but I want to take a moment, just ask a couple of career questions, and Adam's very welcome to jump in as well, because we have been friends with performers for a long time, and really by choice, even before we started the podcast nearly 10 years ago. And we have seen people really flourish, really thrive, you know, but again, not everybody is in your position, right? You are absolutely seen as being successful, and traveling show. And I know that even that comes with many ups and downs. Many shows don't run for 10 years. They don't run for a year. And what's your advice for maybe nervous parents or people of really any age, or especially young people in this case, I guess, who want to pursue the act of being a magician or a traveling artist or performer?
Advice, good question. I think in general, because often people ask for advice and they want some sort of sage piece of wisdom or something that I've, a mantra or a goal or something that I've pursued, but I don't really have those. Like Holly, who works on the show, has a great mantra to live by, which is something like, so she's also a producer, she's produced other people's shows, and she said, be the director and producer of your own life, quite like. But I was like, oh, that's a good answer. I don't have an answer. My thing is always like, I don't really believe in like goals or having something you just doggedly stick to. Like I must have my own theatre or show or television show or something, because then if you're only doggedly going towards that one goal, you're going to miss other opportunities because they don't fit in with your vision. So I prefer just kind of ride the wave, say yes to things, say no to things, just try and ride the wave. So that's how I've been with the show. Things change and different pressures come on, and can you do this, can't you do this, and you just kind of ride the waves. And sometimes like something will, then you go off this way and you're no longer with this thing. Just try and ride the waves and see what, because new exciting things will come along, and then sometimes waves just naturally come to an end, or sometimes they can throw you off in another direction. But yeah, being willing and able to say yes to things, also saying no to things is also important. Also, being a performer, I think the key thing is to perform. Same with being any creative or creator, just create. Just make the thing is a phrase I've heard before. Just make the thing. Doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. Just make the thing. And also, permission to be wrong as well or fail is really important. I don't like these Got Talent shows. I mean, I've auditioned for them because I need to be seen on television to sell tickets to things. But it has this perception of, I don't like them because they fuel this idea that it's talent, not that it's skill or something we've worked on. It's some God-given but innate thing you were born with. It's like people do have natural talents, but you can also learn things and you can refine things and you can practice and try and get better at them. And also that you have to be amazing straight away. You can't fail for a bit and then slowly grow. So I'm so thankful that I've been in this show, which is very successful and allows me to do this as a job and get some notoriety, I guess, and become known. But it's not on such a high platform that I haven't been allowed over the past 10 years to grow as a performer and try things and fail at things and have good nights and bad nights and good ideas and bad ideas. I think just performing is the key thing. You've got to be a performer to perform. And if, like, my son is being interested in performing, he just started doing classes at a local theatre for drama. And we're going to sign him up for this thing we have to pay for, which is kind of expensive, but he'll come out with a qualification at the end. But he seems to really like it. So we're like, absolutely, we'll support you in this. And I'm delighted because it's like, I wish I had this. I sort of did things when I was little, but I didn't come out with a qualification. I just learned it, you know, on the job, so to speak. So just sort of being encouraging. And I will say to my son, have, you know, qualifications for backup plan? Because I don't. Be better than I am. But I'm not going to do the thing of being like, no, you must have an accountancy degree and then go try this, have a proper job and then try this on the side, which is obviously the sensible thing to do. But, you know, the producer of our show, he doesn't actually believe this, but he's always had this idea of like, if you really believe in something, you just sell everything you own and just go do that thing. And he goes, that's obviously wrong and mad. You shouldn't do that. But if it's a real passion, there should be a part of you that could almost do that. You know it's wrong, you're not going to do it because that would be silly and crazy. And if you have a family, you have responsibilities. But there's also a thing, and I want to say, if you're creative, look at other creative people. This is why this is fantastic. I've loved this conversation. You were talking about how it was, it's really focused now, because when creatives talk, even if it's different areas of different, you know, genres of work, you share something in common, you create something. So you have the struggles that are slightly different. So I love, my partner studied writing, so I've read a bunch of books about people who write and their process. Like Stephen King has a book called On Writing, which I think he wrote in the 80s and the 90s. And it's fascinating. You can apply the rules in it to any creative field. Also, visual artists as well, their process is always fascinating. It's a bit more abstract compared to other things. But just looking at the creative world and seeing how other people create is really fascinating and can give you ideas and help fuel your own passions, I think. So yeah, looking at other creators and also just doing the thing, I think are the key bits of advice I would give to anyone, really. And if you're a parent of someone who wants to be a creative, giving them the space and the freedom to do that, and with your guiding hand, preferably, like any parent should do, really.
Wow. What a perfect ending to this. Adam, do you want to add anything else? I feel like
I do not. I love how it's ringing out. I love where you brought it.
Oh my goodness. This is fantastic. Alex, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time, your wisdom, and your friendship in chatting with us and being so openly going into the corners. Like, we really want to kind of get into and things that we really wanted to learn and to be able to explore with you, and we'll absolutely love to invite you back on the show whenever you like. Thanks again.